So I'm positive that you probably saw that whole thing that was going on Alibaba. It was all over social media where basically you could buy a replica AE-86 body, right? Yep. I think it's interesting because there's a lot of stuff there. I think they'd have to be used in the right circumstance, but you know, I think the question comes down, could you build a car out of a box? My thought is, look, as far as an 86, I think I would love to own one if I found the right deal come along, but I'm not enough of an AE86 like real enthusiast to the point where I would spend a grip of money to try to get one and make a car from nothing.
Correct.
I don't own one. So and I think the pathway to the AE86 Chinese body that you get from Alibaba, I think the way it becomes extremely useful is if you already own an AE86 and you are now in a position where, you know, you have a 30-year-old car. Maybe the body panels are just junk. Maybe, you know, maybe there's a lot of rust, a lot of rot. It would take you a lot to put things back together. But you're essentially getting a brand new, body that you can then take all your items and swap over. And, you know, I mean, people can debate this, but maybe even a VIN.
Yep.
To the point where, like, you're basically just replacing, you know, same as you would do quarter panels, different things like that. Obviously, we don't know the quality.
Yep, that's a big part of it.
But the one thing that I'll stress to people before they jump off a cliff and start doing the China thing, yep, right? Regardless of where you think goods should come from, to me, it's not about China or any other country or the U.S. Every country and every manufacturer has the opportunity to make good parts and bad parts.
Correct. So it's going to come down to, is the company enforcing some sort of quality control on the product that they're making, that they're shipping out?
Right, because are the specs of the car the same, exactly the same?
Exactly. Or are they using the same gauge of metal? Is it the same quality metal? We're hoping, you know, metallurgy and things, we were talking about the transmissions last time, that the advancement in technology will help us.
Yeah, but I mean, look, we're talking about 30-year-old cars. In most cases, they were crap boxes.
Yeah.
They weren't, listen, you go back to the 80s, they were not known, the Japanese companies were not known yet for making really great, reliable cars. These were not like the metal was like, you know, I mean, thin as day. I mean, you know, so I don't know how far we're going to be off here as far as the metal quality. I do think that there is a real thing. If you were to buy this body, because let's say you have an AE86 right now, and you know it's got all the pieces, it's intact, it's a nice car, but for you to really go ahead and make like the perfect car, or to get the car 100%, you would require a fair amount of body work, panel changes, whatever it may be. This is a brand new body.
And this goes into, like, what is it, Theseus's ship? Like, how much of the car do you replace before it's not the car anymore anyway?
Okay. I mean, that's a fair component to
so
this.
So if you're cutting out 80% of the body and replacing it with new panels, at that point, what is replacing the whole body and transferring over subframes and components and the stuff that is the driving factor of the vehicle?
I think if the specs of the car, which, you know, I have to imagine that whether it be in China or anywhere else, if you're using a 3D scanner, I have to imagine that the specs are fairly close, if not whatever. Not that those cars had amazing tolerances to begin with, but let's hypothetically say that this puts you right into the ball park of being able to swap a lot of these things over, bolt holes match up, whatever it may be. So is this something that allows you a pathway to basically get a new car and move all your parts over and have, you know, I don't want to say a new AE86, you're still putting stuff over that's old, but like, is this a pathway to that?
So I always feel that it's the replica aspect.
So like, you think that makes it a replica?
The minute that everything changes over, the chassis over, everything's changed, I mean, is it still the car at that point? Like, or are we going into the same point of, like, if you're looking at it from the Shelby Cobras or any of those other kits?
I understand.
Where, yes, everything in it is still Ford, and it looks like Ford, it smells like Ford, and is Ford, but it's still not a Shelby Cobra. It's a Cobra replica car.
Okay, but let me walk you through a hypothetical just to stress this point, okay? let's litmus test this thing, shall we? all right. So let's say I buy a Camaro SS, a 69. I don't even know if they made it. Yeah. Let's say I buy like a 60s vintage Camaro SS. Okay. It's rusted. It's rotted. It's in terrible shape. But I'm going, this is my dream car. I'm going to build this car. So I call up some of these companies, maybe like the year ones or whatever it is, and I buy brand new floor plan. Brand new floor pan. I buy a brand new trunk pan. I buy new quarters. I buy new fenders. I buy new A-pillars. I buy a cowl. I buy a hood. I buy a trunk lid. And I basically start cutting one section out like you would do. I put my junk car onto the rotisserie.
Yep.
My friend is actually doing this exact situation with a convertible car. I don't know how great it would be, but I was there when we changed one of the quarters. I was there when we put the trunk pan in, and I was there when we put the floor pan in, and he had went through and welded it up like when I wasn't there. But what I'm saying is I'm watching him change so many of these panels, right? So when we're done with that car, is that car not? So the only thing, and here's the thing, and then just to add a complication into this thing, for the firewall, he wanted a smooth firewall. So we went ahead, we shaved it, but like the truth is we started with a solid piece of sheet metal and worked it around and built it and bent in the tunnel. So I guess what I'm saying is, so is that not a real Camaro SS?
I feel like that's the eternal question. That was the Theseus's ship, the Argonaut. You know, they replaced every piece of it one piece at a time until every piece was replaced on the ship. So is it still the ship? And I think this is an age-old question that we've been battling with forever, is that where's that line of replacement of component becomes something new?
But we could also argue, am I right? Are we right? And Max is all right. Yeah. GM does this, you know. Yep. You know, they have a licensed product where they basically can sell you essentially a Camaro,
a car,
right?
Without the frame,
they're
the
engine.
Selling you a body. Yeah, they're selling you pieces.
And I don't know if it's one of those things where do they just swap a VIN over or not at this stage? What's the technical reasons? But I will say this. When you get to some of these cars and you're building some of these cars and you're changing like panel after panel after panel after panel after panel, like I don't know where, you know, I don't know where the difference ends up being. You know what I mean? What does that say? Our license, our new metal, new VIN will be assigned by your local DMV. All right. So here's the interesting part.
Go to the one above that said, how do I register? It was right above that.
I'm sure they're going to say as a kit car, right?
MSO.
Oh, VIN transfer.
Yep, VIN transfer. See? Or special construction.
If you have a donor vehicle. Now, I don't think that you're going to take this to Meckham. Meacham?
I don't know.
Meacham? You're going to take this to an auction. I don't think you're going to take these cars to an auction and get them certified or get them to go through as all original cars.
No, not right? at all.
But I would also argue that, and you can have a good repair on some of these cars, if you start changing things, like the car that, let's say you just have to change quarter panels and trunk lid, you know, different things, because the car just wasn't in great shape. I also don't think that that's going to qualify in that same category of an all-original car.
No, and the same companies that we found that do these full shells also do major components like trunks, like hoods, fenders, you know. So even that, they're making all the components necessary to build the vehicle, even if you are doing the restoration.
But, you know, the thing that dawns on me here is that I do believe it's very, very legitimate to buy a complete body as long as you actually have a donor car to swap the things over and to essentially use that VIN and be able to, you know, put all the accoutrement, if you will, into the car to be able to basically have all the same documentation that you know, whatever, just like you're changing any sheet metal.
See, I looked at it from the complete other aspect. I was like, you could build the perfect race car out of this. You have a clean slate to work from. You know, you're not cutting up a perfectly good car. You're not battling with rust. You're not battling with metal fatigue from years of abuse.
So I can get with you on that. Here's where I get lost. I get lost on the thought of That AE86 replacement thing. Let's say we get five people, because there was a minimum on it, right? Let's say we get five people. I think it was around, what, like $9,000?
$9,000 per car, and then it's like $5,000 shipping when you buy a certain amount of cars. I think it's actually 10 for the minimum, just so you know.
10?
10.
That's a lot of cars. But anyhow, all right, so let's say we come up with these people that all want a car. And let's say by the time you get done with it, out the door, all right, 9,000, or 10 pieces, I got you. All right, so let's say hypothetically, we get a whole bunch of people together, we figure out the shipping, we're going to get the shipping down to be $4,000 per dude that's buying one of these cars, or dudette, or whatever else we got. At the end of the day, let's say this car, you for $13,000, you can have a brand new body AE86. Are you going to do that to build a race car with?
It depends on how much more rare these bodies are going to get. That's the problem. Right, what I'm saying is, like, they're still doable, but 10 years from now, if we have this conversation, are they going to be there?
But at the point that you're getting an AE86 as a race car, you're doing it from a nostalgic standpoint. It wasn't the best chassis. No. It wasn't like, you know, I mean, yeah, there's a cool, they make cool drift cars, whatever. If you buy them, get into them, kind of thing like that. And there's a nostalgia factor. If you want to build one,
like a spec class or something like that, where you build a bunch of them and you race them against each other too.
And if you want to own an AE86, a really good 86 for your personal collection, you know, for your ownership, could you buy something like this and then move the drivetrain and all that stuff over? Mm-hmm. So, okay, I'm with you on this. But at some point, there becomes the question of how much, you know, you're not using, like, for $2,500, and no one can fight me on this because I've seen it multiple times. Like, I can go out there and find one of the, you know, FTA or, you know, one of the 86s or, you know, at that point they were FRSs.
Yeah, first gen FRS, whatever.
Right. I can get an FRS, blown motor, but still complete car, $2,500.
Yeah, and you can swap in whatever motor you want and have a perfectly good track car out of it.
Technology is not old.
Nope.
Unibody construction, the whole thing, all is well. Still have all the parts. Yeah. No big deal, right?
Yeah.
And I can find that so much cheaper.
You're literally buying it for the nostalgic factor for the AE86 in that case.
Right, which is why I don't really see too many people building them into race cars as much as I see them building it to replace the sheet metal on a car that they either already own or they're going to plan on building and sourcing
car.
Out.
Dream car.
Dream car, right? Could you build a dream car out of a box?
Yeah.
Here's my question. Could you imagine if they did this for like the R32 and the R33?
Well, I actually looked.
Do they have
I think
them?
The closest we found was like an S chassis, possibly.
Right.
But the more that I kept looking.
I've seen a Z before.
We found the 240Z,
right.
The Datsun. So they do the first gen Zs, bunch of stuff on that we found. But it gets harder to find when you get into the one. You would think that the R32, R33, R34 would be like, you know, golden for this.
Right, right.
But we didn't find anything.
Because it's crazy. Because to me, I feel like, so there's a fair amount, you know, whether you look overseas or, you know, maybe even people that got stuff with them. A lot of them are in Canada where you have R32s, 33s. I don't want to say 34s, but there are 34s out there. Especially up in Canada, they've been here for a long time, that have started to, you know, rust their way away. I mean, their cars are still old.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily saying they're GTRs or whatever it may be, but let's say hypothetically, you know, you can find an R32 GTR for $20,000 up in Canada or whatever it is, and it's, you know, it's rust. It's, you know, they were plagued with rust, right?
Yep.
So let's say, but hypothetically say that you can now get brand new full sheet metal body for $15,000 or $20,000.
To me, that's worth it.
100%.
That's the dream car in the box.
Right?
Because then you can very easily get one that can't be through inspection or whatever, that it's not able to come to the U.S. and you get all the parts.
But even if, it can't be in the U.S. factor. Let's talk about the fact that, all right, I'm going to buy a car in Canada. And I'm going to bring it across because it's allowed to come down here.
Yep.
I'm bringing it across. But the thing is going to be plagued with rust. I know that. I'm not even going to waste my time trying to do quarters and this and that. Not going to waste my time. But I am going to take the drivetrain. I'm going to take the seats. I'm going to take interior. Yeah. Transfer everything over. I'm going to move everything over. And I'm going to have a good condition R32 GTR. And I'm not going to be plagued with all those issues that come up. And, you know, you're starting with whatever. So you'll come through. You'll be able to stitch weld the chassis if you want. You know, you'll be able to do things to this chassis before, because it's basically now a full-on restoration.
Yep.
The question is it still a GTR? You think it's a GTR?
No.
All right.
I think that's going to be the question for the comments, though, because they're going to be the judgment right on that one.
The question is this, the American cars have been doing this for quite a while. If you go to, year one or some of these other companies, you can, that's sick, by the way, that car's sick. You can absolutely buy full bodies and do different things. You can buy different components. I do think that there are some tough pieces whenever you get to this car. If you don't have a donor car, building a car out of a box just got a lot more expensive.
I just feel that the minute that you take the body that was no longer produced by the manufacturer and you remove that aspect of it, it becomes a replica.
But is it sacrilege, or is it just that it's a replica?
It's just a replica. It's not sacrilege. I mean, hey, I like GT40 replicas just as much as a regular GT40. It doesn't make a difference that it's a replica. If the build quality's there and the workmanship is there, it's still an amazing vehicle. That doesn't change. What just changes is just the designation of it being original or not.
I'm with you on that. I agree with you that if you, in that respect, I think it gets tough, especially like, you know, there's a lot of things that obviously would stand out like a sore thumb. VIN stampings, place on a firewall. I mean, you know, like even with, you know, a lot of the Z's, you can go through and you can look, but they also
literally etched right in the back of the firewall.
So I believe a lot of those things. But the question is, if I bought, you know, if I purchased a GTR, and I mean, it was just absolute junk, could you then use the brand new body and basically bring some of the car over? At what point?
That's the question.
Like, at what point? Like, it's okay to change quarter panels. It's okay to, I have seen R32 GTRs, R33 GTRs in build processes where they were all cut. They cut out all the rust and stuff like that, where they looked like.
Do we follow homologation rules where it's the roof and the freaking firewall has to still be the columns?
All right.
Like, do we consider that being where the line is drawn? Like,
That's a good point. I like the idea of being able to salvage cars that are basically done.
Of course, because you keep them alive longer.
Right. So, like, I like the idea of this whole thing, but the question really, it does, I would agree with you. I think the line starts to get blurry when you have a whole body, because now, like you said, there is nothing original about that metal, but it's all brand new metal.
I mean, I looked at it when we were going through this, and, you know, I came up with 240Z with an RB in it. You could do full suspension subframes, custom everything, and build your dream.
But how much?
$75,000 by the time you're setting down, $100,000 for a Datsun.
Right.
But you can do whatever you want. And that's what's, I see, even like what he's pulling up now with these off-road, with what is that, an FJ or something, a Land Cruiser. You know, you can do whatever you want with them. They have so many options out there. They literally ship them in a box to you.
Yeah.
All the panels, all the pieces. Some of them we even found, they have harnesses and pedal assemblies and steering columns.
And to me, that always becomes the tricky part, right? That becomes a tricky part. Whenever you get one of these cars in a box, like, you know, you look at that and you're like, yeah, I got a car. But, like, you don't really have a car. Because by the time you get done putting all the pieces in to make it, quote, unquote, original,
yeah,
you now have spent a grip of money if you don't already have them.
Yep.
Right?
You're spending more than what you would if you bought another donor car and swapped over components in a lot of cases.
So, and this reminds me very much of what, like, the Stance, if anybody's familiar with the Stance Works channel, they're doing this F40 build, okay? So a Ferrari F40, everybody knows the grail car, right?
Yep.
Stupid money those cars are. But what he did was he's been spent, and he just released it a few days ago, I believe, and he's going through and essentially he sourced the front end from an F40, all original Ferrari body panels, no reproduction, no aftermarket things, all original stuff. He's got a front end, he's got factory doors, he's got the rear clamshell, sort of. He's got bumpers and etc. So now what he did was he's been working on getting all these parts for a long time. Sure, it cost him a grip of money because those parts itself are grip money. A lot of them are new old stock. So what he did was he laid it out over on a bench. Okay, I don't want to call it a bench, but like, you know, they're more, it's more like a big fixture, rolling fixture, like table,
frame table type thing.
Yeah, exactly. So what he did was he laid it out, and when he lays it out, it looks ridiculously scary. How like it's the exterior of an F40 to the point where like it looks. Yeah. Like, I mean, the proportions, everything's perfect, right? So the question is, he basically made the point of like, my idea, I mean, look at that, even just in like putting panels around to mock it up. So he's got square tubing, obviously holding a lot of that stuff together. Those are original body panels, different things like that. Now, he notes that, look, these cars came with a tub and a lot of aluminum square tubing and different things like that. Yes, I don't have a car. If we were going to try to buy one of those cars, I wouldn't be able to afford this project at all, right? But what his point is that by making a tubular frame, right, making a whole chassis that's tubular, he can essentially design, develop, and build a structure that is more advanced than the 30-something-year-old F40 was originally, right? And he's going to put these parts on, and they're all going to fit well, and they're going to, you know, I mean, if he does a good job, they're going to fit well. You know, people are saying, you know, I'm sure he covers this right in his video, and people should go check it out, because I think this project is going to be sick. Although I think it's going to take him years. But, like, if you look at, like, he's missing the A-pillars.
Yep.
And so one of the things, I think it was a 244. I don't know. I'm not a super Ferrari guy, so, you know, don't burn me here. But, like, I think he said that the 244 or one of the 358s, they use the same windshield and pillars and cowl. So what he was going to do is he was going to get that and kind of graft those two pieces together, and that part would be the only part. But he said they're the same. Like, they're the same. So when he gets done, he's going to have an incredible car that would be extremely difficult to distinguish, you know, from an F40. Now, those are all Ferrari panels.
You knew where I was going to go with it before I even got there. Because I was going to say, if those panels were reproduction and then you didn't have the monocoque, or you didn't have a cockpit that was Ferrari, then none of it would be Ferrari. So for me, it would just be a replica anyway.
I understand. So, so the reason I bring this car up is because I think this is the extreme hypothetical situation of what we're talking about.
It's like the opposite hypothetical situation, because you're talking all the panels are original, but the body may not be.
Or no, see, but that's what I'm saying. I think for this car, this is the body. Like, what he's got for that car is the body. Like, you had a bunch of aluminum and sheet metal and the carbon.
I'm thinking monocoque versus, you know, this is at that turn where you had the monocoque and the tubular.
I understand.
You know, hybridization there.
But that car was a race car to begin with. This isn't a car that came with a lot of molded plastics. True. This isn't a car that came with, this is a car that had carpet thrown down over, you know, metal and carbon and some different things. This was a rugged, real race car.
Yeah, and the whole back half was tubular, correct? It literally just has a firewall break where the engine is, and then I think everything else was just built on.
I believe so. But if I remember correctly, when we say tubular, it wasn't really, it was square tubular.
Square tube. Square tubular. Square tube.
Yeah, square tube. So they did square tube. So I think when I look at some of these, and you're right, in this case, he doesn't have one of those, so he doesn't have a VIN, which means this will be a reproduction.
Yes, or replica, not, reproduction, whatever.
Not question, not like no question. But now let me ask you a question, because I think this is a good one, and then we'll stop talking about this.
It's okay.
What if you were able to afford or come across a totally destroyed, wrecked car but you did have just the bare cockpit part of the structure of the car. No body panels, nothing. Even the tub is already got to be kind of put, fixed or repaired. You know what I mean? But it's got a VIN. And we got original Ferrari body panels.
And what's even better is Gas Monkey technically did that
because I understand.
They cut up Ferrari that they yep. did. That's but that a
car
real
was,
one.
That car wasn't just cut up. I mean, that car was crashed, right?
But I'm saying it, by using actual panels, they met the requirement the Ferrari, for Ferrari. It to be a Ferrari
still. Until they changed the color.
Well, let's be honest, black always looks better.
But though. I guess what I'm saying in this thing is that so can you be in a situation like if he gets one of these things with, you know, with a VIN, like now all of a sudden is his project 100% in an F40?
It's going to come down to the community, isn't it? It's going to be a choice because we can't be how the ones that judge that.
How come I always get burned on the internet, but you can take Switzerland and make it your state? This is crap. Anyhow, I think it's really interesting. I think, you know, for me, maybe the part where I get all warm and fuzzy about the idea is like there are so many R32 and R33s. You know, so let me put it this way, and I'm gonna stop talking after this.
Okay.
here's my thing. If for me, I've started to see, and I believe a lot of other people that have maybe dreamed of having an R32, 33, or 34 GTR. The prices have gone so far above where most people could ever afford it. I just don't believe that these cars are obtainable for most people anymore. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%.
All right. So I guess, you know, the idea, but there are plenty of cars between Japan and different countries or whatever where they're completely like rotted through. And yes, I know that means how much money is going to go into buying all the other pieces to make the car good again. I get it. But if you find a car that's fairly complete, and I know that it would be very, very difficult to find a lot of the little pieces because that's still a problem even if you get a nice car now.
Yeah.
Window trims, things like that.
Oh, always.
But if you could swap most of the stuff over to a brand new body if you have something that's completely rusted out and salvage that thing and really be able to afford a car at some point, because you can buy it in drips and drabs or whatever it is, you can buy a $20,000, kind of GTR that's, you know, smashed or crashed or whatever it is. As long as there's good salvageable pieces, you know, is this a pathway for some of these cars not only to come back to life in a sense, but also for people to legitimately maybe get their hands on something that's going to make them pretty happy?
So I think it's a great avenue to go for a cost effective.
Ownership
of the car that you want.
Yeah.
But this also goes back. Does it go back to being a Type R if you put Type R hubs and engine, powertrain? It's like this is that thing of how do we define where the car begins and ends? And
right.
I know you're saying I'm playing in Switzerland.
No, but, I know what you mean.
But it's such a case-by-case basis that it becomes hard to establish.
Because it's how much and what was the original. I know. And then it's really open to subjective opinion.
Yep.
Interesting. So I guess the question we're going to leave everyone out there with is, what do you think? If you were able to buy any of car that you want to restore that's maybe 20, 30 years old, you have a car now that has a lot of these pieces, but you know, you're fantasizing about, you know, oh, well, I got this thing's full of rust, the frames, this, that, the other thing, but you can buy a brand new body for, let's say, 15 grand and be able to move all your stuff over to it. Is this something you do because it gets you kind of a brand new exterior and, you know, in structure of the car, but allows you to, you know, kind of take what you have and move it over and the legacy continues? Or is this basically just you assembling a really expensive kit car at this point and you lost the nostalgia because as much as it will look like it is one of these cars, it's really not?
It was never made by the company that
made the car. So I guess that's the question for you. Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Should people be allowed to do this? Voice your opinion. Let it be heard. Don't attack me so much. It's hard. It's hard out here, man. We're just trying to bring you some conversation amongst car people, right? But that's it. Thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Peace out.